For those in recovery, support from friends and family often leads to better outcomes. Here's to those who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. Visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose for information about treatment options and how to support those experiencing addiction.
What's better than watching your team win? Winning money while you do it. I'm Jim Costa, and on Cash the Ticket, Mike Valenti and I give you the edge to make every game playable. College football, NFL, we're breaking it all down game by game. Your podcast feed is going to be filled, and you're going to love it. You can click on the games you care about. We do it all. With our analysis, we're finding games that other people aren't talking about. We're turning every Saturday and every Sunday into days where you got a chance to win. Don't just sit on the sidelines. Cash the Ticket with us. Follow Cash the Ticket in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be. To be.
Hey, when you don't got to work on Monday, Tuesday doesn't feel that bad. Because all of a sudden, tomorrow's Wednesday. And it's one day closer to football. Season opens Thursday night here on the Team 980. And then, of course, Friday, you got the game in Brazil. We'll talk to Noah Eagle later in the week about that. He's calling it for Peacock. And then Sunday, you got Commanders and Bucks at 4:25. And every single Tuesday, 5 o'clock during the season, it's a Tischler Tuesday here on The Hoffman Show.
Today's top story, from the perspective of someone who's there.
You are looking live.
It's just in.
Not my beat.
That's right. We're doing it this year. Tischler Tuesdays. Mitch Tischler, co-host of the Beltway Football Podcast, of course, with JP Finley with us. Mitch, how was your long weekend, my friend?
It was great. Love the weather. I got to play a little bit of golf, hang out with some friends, barbecue. It was perfect.
That is, I mean, good gracious. You draw one up on the Americana play sheet. Call that one every Labor Day weekend. That is A-plus work, especially if you hit them well.
We had a lot of fun. How about that?
That, you know, that's honestly, when I play golf, Mitch, that's all I'm really going for. But you actually play on a regular basis and have the capability of being good. I don't. But that's a conversation perhaps for a different day. Mitch, the top storyline today in command land is the unofficial depth chart, which is always a bit silly because that key word, unofficial. But they have kept Brandon Coleman at the top at left tackle. Do we think that the rookie is going to start, and what chance do we give him of being successful considering the lack of reps he's gotten due to the injury he sustained during training camp?
Yeah, I think his success level is the same place that it's been pre-injury. As long as he's back 100%, I don't know that, you know, a couple snaps in the preseason would have really made a massive difference in terms of, you know, how well he's going to play. I think for us as fans and media that are covering the team, I think that it leaves some questions because we haven't seen him play against anybody except for the Commanders, you know, own defense. But the coaches have said for a while that you know, they were excited about Brandon Coleman, and he was taking those first team reps kind of before he got hurt. So they're particularly high on him. I think we're going to see him start week one, and I think he's going to be kind of your guy there.
I'm not saying that I have no questions about Brandon Coleman at all. And in fact, I probably have more questions about Coleman than I do, say, Cornelius Lucas. But part of that is because I know who Cornelius Lucas is, and some of the things I know about Cornelius Lucas make me excited that Brandon Coleman is playing. Where do you kind of come down on your, I'll call it your nervousness level of starting a rookie left tackle to protect a rookie quarterback's blind side in week one of a season?
Yeah, I mean, listen, when you draw it up, that's not probably what, you know, the entire coaching staff had planned for week one for Jaden Daniels for the number two overall pick when they got it. But at the same time, they've showed confidence in him from the beginning, and they've been excited about him. And I think that, you know, you have a veteran play caller in Cliff Kingsbury who, you know, you hope is going to take the veteran route and, you know, call an offense, call a situation that works well for this offensive line group, which, you know, when you break down individual talent is what it is. But I think as a whole, combined with, you know, with Cliff calling plays, they can get the ball out quickly. They can do some things in the quick pass game. And that's where I think Brandon Coleman's, you know, big level up is over Cornelius Lucas, and that's his ability to get downfield and make the extra block. And that's something that this coaching staff asks of this O-line pretty consistently. So I think you're going to see a couple plays today or on Sunday where Terry's going to get a ball quick out to the left, and you're going to see big old 74 lumbering down the field, leading the way, blocking for him. And, you know, Brandon Coleman's athleticism gives him the opportunity to be super successful in that world.
Mitch Hischler, co-host of the Beltway Football Podcast, with us on the Hoffman Show. I think you're dead on with that, Mitch. And that's exactly the example I was going to bring up is, you know, Cliff kind of comes, it's a different approach, but similar to how Sean and Kyle and like all these young offensive coordinators think about the game, because a lot of them were influenced, even if it was indirectly, by some of the same people that influenced Cliff, the Mike Leaches of the world, etc., whose whole like modus operandi is we must try to have every blade of grass available to us as to be threatened, I guess would be the best way to put it. Every single snap. Because if the more ground that we make defenses cover, and some people do that by attacking more horizontally and then occasionally sprinkling in the vertical, the air raid traditionally has been more like we're going to hit you vertically, and that might create some room for us to do some really innovative and damaging stuff horizontally. It seems like Cliff in training camp at the very least was like, we're going to attack sideline to sideline. And to me, it felt like if, as long as Lucas was out there, you got like hash, not necessarily hash mark, let's call it numbers to sideline versus sideline to sideline. And that little bit, I think, will go ultimately a long way.
Yeah, and I think as you talk about kind of threatening every blade of grass, I think Cliff likes to bring that threat from a lot of different places. And so while typically you don't have running backs running, you know, go routes or wheel routes particularly often, I think you're going to see a little bit more of that in this offense. I think, you know, at tight end, you're going to see a little more verticality from Zach Ertz in the middle of the field. And I think the fact that, you know, he kind of, the way that they look at this thing is to try and be creative in the way that they attack, getting extra blockers in front of their, you know, in front of their running backs, in front of their wide receivers, isn't only in the screen game, isn't only in the quick pass game. There's an expectation that if the ball is going out to the left, that your left tackle is going to, you know, get off that block once the ball is clean and kind of work his way downfield and make those blocks. And so I think when you look kind of at the O-line in general, you have Brandon Coleman, Nick Allegretti, Tyler Biadasz, Sam Cosmi. Four of these five guys are high up on that athleticism scale and the ability to kind of help out in different ways. And I think it's going to be interesting to watch kind of how Cliff engineers this offense, because they can be, you know, they can put teams in a bad situation in multiple different facets.
So next week, Mitch, we will be able to actually look back at a game and talk about, at the very least, a single game, which will be fun. In the meantime, we get to do things like this. Are you ready to play a game?
I am ready to play a game.
Yes. All right. So very easy game. Confidence levels 1 to 10, because there are a ton of what-ifs on this defense. What if this guy can make this position switch, or can this guy turn it around? So confidence level that it will happen. Let's just pick three. Let's start off with the one that I think more people, I'm going to say, are taking for granted. What do we make confidence level 1 to 10, 1 being least confident, 10 being most confident, of Frankie Louvu's ability to be a premier pass rusher on third downs as an edge? Not as a blitzer, as a true edge.
I mean, if you're breaking it down to specifically Louvu on third down as a rusher, I give it maybe a 5 in terms of my confidence, because I think in those obvious pass downs, I think that's where you might see offensive lines are ready for him. I think what's going to be interesting with Louvu is when they bring him on first and second down, and he's kind of a surprise. He's kind of a surprise rusher for these offenses to deal with. I think Louvu might be the best pure pass rusher on this roster, maybe Dorrance Armstrong from the edge position at least, or from the outside. But I do think that, you know, his ability to do a bunch of different things is kind of where his edge lays. And particularly when he comes early on and downs, I think that he's going to surprise some teams.
I don't disagree with you, but it's, to me, like watching camp and the way they rotated things and everything they've said, I think when it's third down, an obvious passing situation, Dante Fowler's on one side and Louvu's on the other. And obviously Jamin and John Baptiste will probably rotate in some with that. But like, I'm pretty sure that's their plan. And in 2 minutes, it definitely is their plan. Like, we saw that a ton in camp. Like, he's going to line up at edge. And I'm curious if that is actually his best use, or is his best use moving him around a little bit more like you were saying?
I'll tell you my hot take. I think Dante Fowler on the outside is going to be super fun to watch. And maybe I don't think he's going to get enough reps necessarily to lead the team in sacks, but I think his, you know, sack per rep ratio will be amongst the highest on this team. His ability to use his speed around the outside and then also work kind of counters to get back underneath offensive tackles is pretty elite, at least as far as I've seen in camp. And one thing that I really liked that I saw was early on in camp, you know, Dante Fowler knows his speed is what it is and is able to get to the edge against some guys, but I love seeing him work those counters and working, getting back underneath and kind of causing an offensive tackle to get on skates here. When they get to those obvious passing downs and he's able to, you know, find himself kind of matched up one-on-one with some tackles, he's going to give guys a problem. And I'm not saying it's going to happen every down, but I do think that he can be an elite pass rusher in spots for this team.
Yeah, no, I agree. Vet got the know-how. We'll see how much juice he's got left. Going to be fun to watch. All right, second hypothetical, or not hypothetical, second confidence rating here for Mitch Tischler on a Tischler Tuesday on the Hoffman Show. And I'm going to go in order here. That's one that I think people are kind of taking for granted. Here's another one that I think people are kind of taking for granted, maybe a little less so, and then we'll get to the obvious what if on defense for the last of our three. What do we have in terms of confidence, 1 to 10, on Quan Martin's ability to be an every-down starting safety in the NFL in year two?
Yeah, my confidence is really high with Quan. I would say an 8.5. I think that particular to Quan, he was asked to learn too much last year and play in too many different positions on this defense. And I think the fact that they've simplified it and kind of narrowed down the expectations for him has helped him take a big step. And I think he's going to be a guy that you can rely on. And, you know, with Jeremy Chinn on the other side, a guy who's a little bit more of a veteran who's kind of been there, done that. Chinn is more of your kind of box safety guy, and Quan will be more of your free safety guy over the top. But I'm excited to see what Quan can do. And I think that he will specifically for himself take a big step between the play level that we saw last year to this year.
No, I agree with that. I think it's interesting because he was much more of a nickel last year, and then they played him at safety some, but he hadn't really been doing it a whole lot. So I'm pretty fascinated. And then, you know, you do have the versatility to still have him play some big nickel, play some in the box in three safety looks with Chinn and Percy Butler, who I presume, even though they put him down on the depth chart, but I presume that Percy Butler is actually the third safety, considering he was the third safety the entirety of camp. But that defensive backfield, Mitch, leads us to the final confidence ranking, which is the ability for Emmanuel Forbes and or Benjamin St. Juice to turn into legitimate, good, above average starting caliber corners in the NFL. And for Forbes specifically, hopefully a really good one because he was a first round pick a year ago. What is your confidence level that the change in coaching, what they're being asked to do, et cetera, can turn those guys into legit starting NFL corners?
Yeah, I don't have a ton of confidence there. I'll put it at a 4 that one of the two will become a good NFL corner. I just think it's tough. I think this defense, they're going to ask a lot of these guys, and I don't know that they're necessarily up to the challenge. We're going to see them stuck a lot of times in one-on-one press coverage at the line, and they're going to be asked to win those, and we haven't seen a lot of it. And I think on top of it, you know, the pass rush, I think the top end of the pass rush, I think, is going to take a step back from what we've seen in past years. And this is a defense that's going to rely on getting to the quarterback and putting pressure so the quarterback has to get rid of the ball quickly. And these corners are, you know, ostensibly you're hoping that they're not going to have to cover for, you know, 8-10 seconds in the secondary, but I think they might. And inevitably somebody's going to break open there. I'm concerned about the back end of this pass defense, but mostly on the outside, not necessarily up the middle.
Yeah, the funny thing is, Mitch, like, I totally agree with their approach in let's find out if these guys are good because we have no idea what they were because they were so poorly utilized last year. And if they actually are bad at football, that's a year two project, while also not having a super high confidence level that it's actually going to go well. Like, I'm actually fine with the process, even if I'm scared / nervous, whatever, you know, wherever you want to be on that scale about the result.
Yeah, and the only thing I'll say for both of them is you look at what the corners were doing in Dallas the past couple seasons. they put up kind of gaudy interception numbers, but they gave up big time passing yards too. And that's, you know, seems to be something that, you know, Dan Quinn, Joe Jr. are kind of okay with, as long as you're able to make the big, you know, splash turnover plays. They're okay with, you know, giving up a couple big plays here and there. So I think it will be an adjustment for ourselves and for everyone watching this team as to what counts as successful for this cornerback group. But man, you really hope that Emmanuel Forbes is able to get his hands on some balls early, get some confidence, you know, start working his way back to being kind of the corner that most of the NFL thought he was going to be coming out last year.
Yeah, no doubt about it. All right, last thing with Mitch Hischler here, of course, co-host of the Beltway Football Podcast. What is your favorite Commander season bet that you guys gave out on the show, presuming that you did, because I know your show?
We actually haven't done season-long predictions, but I will say early on in the year, I offered a wager, and it was a weighted wager, that Luke McCaffrey would have more receiving yards than Jahan Dotson, and the fact that Jahan's not on the Commanders anymore kind of makes me think that I have a default win there, but we'll get to that. My favorite bet is Jaden Daniels over passing yards. I think he's going to throw for 3,000 yards this year. I think he's going to be, you know, the best rookie quarterback that we've seen since RG3, but, you know, he's not going to do it with the same kind of flair and pizzazz and everything that that obviously RG did, but I do think kind of long-term that that's for the best, and so I'm pretty pro most over Jaden bets.
So for the Jahan bet, like, was that one you made with JP? And is he going to try to enforce it as Jahan with the Eagles versus Luke here, or do you default win the second Luke McCaffrey has one receiving yard this year because it has to be Washington receiving yards?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to hold his feet to the fire on this one because we make a billion bets, and you know, we end up if we end up pushing a couple, so be it. To me, it's a push that happened, and I think JP kind of agrees with it. But big picture, I think it points to the fact that I was right about Luke having a bigger impact than Jahan this year for this team.
That, I think, is very well put, Mitch Tischler. Very well put. Tischler Tuesdays, 5 o'clock for Not My Beat each and every week. Mitch, I'm excited to do this again next week because we'll have a football game to talk about. Have a great rest of your week, and we'll talk to you next Tuesday.
Absolutely. Can't wait to be breaking down some football with you.
Absolutely, dude. All right, that's Mitch Tischler, everybody. Check him out at the Beltway Football Podcast with JP Finley. They do that a couple times a week. Just subscribe, and then bang, bang, it'll be in your podcast feed. And actually, Anthony, I was going to save this point for Never Read the Comments on Thursday because I had this conversation with a YouTube commenter in the comments, if you will. But what Mitch just said at the end there about like what the bet means is actually really poignant. Which, you know, is something that you say all the time about bet analysis. But someone was commenting on the conversation that we had on Friday's show with Nate Tice about Jaden Daniels. And, you know, obviously Nate was a big Drake May guy in the draft. And what I said was, like, you should go back and listen to when we talked to Nate at the Combine. Because I had a lot of questions about Drake May at that point, and still do, to be very clear. But I was like, why are you so high on him? What about this weakness? And Nate was like, oh yeah, I see that. I just don't think it's going to matter as much. Now, if he goes to team X, Y, or Z, that might matter a lot more. And like, okay, well, I like this about Jaden. He's like, I love that about Jaden too. I just think that gets mitigated in the NFL in a lot of circumstances. But then we talked to him on Friday and he's like, actually, that thing that I said might not matter as much for Jaden is perfect in Cliff Kingsbury's offense. And so lo and behold, I love where Jaden Daniels is, and maybe I'm even higher on him than I initially thought I would be before he got drafted to an actual team. And so what happens is, especially in draft time, but also in the season, like, we get so caught up with analysts, and this happens to me, and I probably also at times do this, but I think this happens, frankly, if I'm being honest, Anthony, to me more than it does me doing this to other analysts. We get too caught up with the graphic on the screen, if you will, someone's actual rankings. And here is Nate giving all this analysis, all this like really good information and kind of the what ifs and how like this could play out this way. This is a trait. Here's how I think it translates, but this is the thing I know for sure, the trait. And we ignore all that stuff but you like that guy better, so you must think my guy sucks. And like the point with Mitch in the bet is to take it to a different context is like his point wasn't necessarily like, here's how you win some money on a bet. It's, I think Luke McCaffrey has a bigger impact than Jahan Dotson. And that's good analysis, no matter how you frame it on a graphic, most important Commanders receivers, or a bet, or whatever. And I don't like the analysis getting lost so much. That's my high horse of the day.
Are you going to be placing any bets this season?
I might.
Oh.
You know, we could...
Let me find out.
We have one. I think it's easier to bet in DC now. So yeah, that does
everywhere
help things, as opposed to some of the previous restrictions that have been lifted. Maybe we should do a Commanders betting segment later in the week.
On like a Friday?
Yeah, we don't have a lot of room. Like, the week's pretty filled out.
I know.
But we gotta have space somewhere.
Yeah.
For, you know, Terry over under, B-Rob, maybe Eckler or Ertz.
Gotta get our best prop
Jaden
bet.
Yeah. Yeah. See if there's any funky ones. Maybe we'll pick one non-Commanders bet. And we can just have a show pack that we're gonna stick, I don't know, $5 on all of them.
Okay.
See what happens.
Hey, look,
see if we can make some money by the end of the year.
I hope so.
Do we parlay them all together and make it extra dumb, or and just go ahead and forfeit all the money?
No.
Okay, that's the correct
answer. I have learned one thing when it comes to betting.
Do not.
Straight bets are king.
Yeah, do not over parlay. And in fact, really, you should never parlay, but
don't. I used to do big parlays, big like 10-leg parlays. Never
yeah,
hit.
It's just, yeah, no kidding. No kidding. By the way, really, really quick, because now we're up against the clock. We were going through on Friday our weekend preview, and I just for whatever reason remembered that Ohio State was favored over Akron by 48.5. You know what the score was?
Wasn't it 52-0?
It's 52-6.
Oh, that hurts.
It's a 48-point spread. How do they do that?
I don't know how they do it. It was another I think it was Michigan. Yeah. Was it Michigan? I think Michigan, whoever they played.
There was a bad beat situation.
Yeah, they missed it by like half a point or something like that.
It's insane.
I don't know how
they
do
it. Air condition the desert because they lose, folks.
Yeah.
Not going to stop us from having fun with it. But remember, have fun responsibly. All right. When we get back here on the Team 980, 5:30 and 6:30, we are going to go through the Commanders offense, 5:30, defense, 6:30. Best case scenario for the season, worst case scenario for the season. It's next.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be. To be.
It's not just about watching the game. It's about betting on it. I'm Mike Valeni, and on Cash the Ticket, Jim Costa and I break down every college football and NFL matchup like it's the last game we're ever going to watch. From the best bets to the sneaky underdogs, and of course, as my co-host likes to say, the value. And the one thing we're not going to do is pretend we're professionals. We have fun with it. It's an entertainment product, and it makes watching games a hell of a lot of fun. So Cash the Ticket. Follow it in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
In life and recovery, every day is a little different. Embrace the good days, the not so good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
Stop and show. We're on the Team 980, always live as well on the free Odyssey app. Tomorrow on the show, we will go through the best case scenario for some of the Commanders' key players and the worst case scenarios and see what that would mean for the team in terms of wins and losses in 2024. But today, Anthony, our focus in a lot of ways is on scheme. Ah, yeah, we're getting football nerdy with it. We are looking at scheme stuff. We're going to look deeper into how the NFL is making that easier coming up at 6 o'clock with Bill Smith, the NFL's Director of Research and Analytics. But Anthony, I wanted to talk off the heels of our conversation with Nate Tice on Friday, where we talked with Nate for, he was here with us for three segments talking about how Jaden Daniels fits with Cliff Kingsbury and then some of the offensive and defensive trends of the year schematically and what he's seeing as he breaks down the whole league. And I think the biggest thing to remember in all of this is that offensively, teams are trying to generate explosive plays. And defensively, they're trying to prevent explosive plays. And I think what's interesting about Cliff is they are going to try to generate their explosive plays in two ways, one of which is super traditional and one of which is, I don't want to call it less traditional, I'm going to call it less known. The first is vertical shots in the passing game. They are hunting those opportunities. The other is less fun to talk about. It's game plan runs, but we'll get to that in a second. So in the passing game, what I think is really fun about what Cliff does is they're going to use formations to create matchups. And a lot of times it's, let's go three wide receivers on one side, one wide receiver on the other. And this is what he did in Arizona. This is what he's done. And it's a kind of a staple of the air raid offense, even though he's not running the air raid. This is just basic. If we know as an offense that if we have three receivers on one side and one on the other, that you're going to play a certain coverage. And on that one-on-one side, that one receiver side, you're going to get one-on-one coverage. Go ball. It's time. Like, let's send Terry down the field. Let's send Diami down the field. Let's send, you know, all these other dudes that run 4.3s or are big and strong and have a physicality to their route running. Like Luke McCaffrey, I don't think they're going to isolate him a whole bunch. But really, it'll probably be Noah Brown, Diami, and Terry most often, Zaccheaus some. Like, my guy versus your guy. Let's throw it up there. And with a quarterback in Jaden Daniels who throws, I would say immediately, a top 10 deep ball in the NFL before he's even taken a snap. Best deep ball thrower in the draft in terms of accuracy and placement and loft and like kind of understanding how to drop it in the bucket. I think that's a good plan, Anthony. How about that for some analysis?
I definitely think it's a great plan. And we also got to see it, you know, on display in the preseason. We got to see it during training camp. I think, you know, that's what they want to do. They want to be able to, you know, target that portion of the field. And the fact that, you know, guys like Diami Brown's coming around, he's, you know, making plays, hopefully that, you know, translates to the season, because he's had some good preseasons and it hasn't necessarily, you know, translated to the regular season. So the fact that, you know, we're giving our guys on the outside chance to go up there, be great, I think it's, I think Jaden could be, you know, poised for a big, you know, season. But I think that also is going to be dependent upon how well the running game goes, because again, the run game can set up the pass game. And I don't think Brian Robinson, you know, I think he's one of the more underrated backs in the league, and it's in part because we've been losing. Like, there hasn't really been a lot of excitement, you know, to build around him. So I feel like,
well, and last year the offensive coordinator forgot that running too. The ball can happen even though he played running back.
That too. But yeah, if B Rob goes out there and do what we've seen him do, just not the workload that, you know, he's deserving of, I think we can definitely be excited for some big plays down the field.
Yeah, I mean, B Rob last year had one of the higher yards over expected run, you know, stats, go to kind of the advanced stats. Like, what's it blocked for? What do you get? He had 40 more yards than was blocked for last year. Which was, I believe, top 10 in the NFL amongst running backs. I think definitely top 15, if not top 10 in the NFL. But it was good number. And he just still averaged 4.5 yards a carry because he just didn't have that many carries. And the blocking at times in the run game was not very good. With that said, you know, we can circle back to the run game in a second. I think his usage in the passing game could be huge. And I think that, you know, the other thing about kind of the way Cliff schemes it up, those one-on-ones, those outsides, that outside stuff, is there's not a great counter to it defensively that doesn't have other deficiencies. So, like, your running game becomes really important because the way to make it so that you can't have one-on-one on the outside is you play cover two or cover four. Well, now you don't have enough players in the box to support the run. Okay, so now we're in single high structures. Middle field closed structures, if you want to get super nerdy with it. It just means there's a safety in the middle of the field, right? So that's cover one, where it's true man-to-man on the outside, one safety in the middle, or cover three, which is, for vertical routes, essentially man-to-man on the outside because you're responsible for a deep third and straight line as a corner, and a safety in the middle that can kind of help you, but it's not really. And especially if you're playing cover three and there's three receivers on one side and one on the other, which side do we think that middle safety is going to cheat towards? Probably the three receiver side. And so it essentially creates a one-on-one island that simplifies the read. It doesn't matter if it's cover one or cover three. You're not reading an in-breaking or a slant route and it's like, is that guy playing man or is he falling off into another throw potentially? Like, you just, my guy is running straight at the other guy. And if you have good receivers who can read that stuff well and read leverage and a quarterback is on the same page, and this is how Jaden Daniels lived often at LSU because he had such great receivers on the outside, is, okay, well, now our plan to stop it as a defense is we're just going to play really far off. Okay, well, then we're just going to run up until your cushion runs out, and we're going to stop, and we're going to turn around. The football is going to hit us between the numbers, 1 and 7, right on the 2, if you're Diami, whatever version of that is, and we're going to just get chunk yards by, and by the way, get chunk yards on an island where if we slip a tackle, we're up the sideline. And now that safety that was kind of shaded to the other side has got to run all the way over and make a tackle. So there's just, it simplifies things in a way that is great, especially for a young quarterback. And I think the last part of it, Anthony, why it's so good for this team is it happens quickly, right? You don't need a ton of protection to throw a go ball. There are some deeper developing route concepts that you, if you're running, you know, scissors concepts and you've got the, you know, hey, we're running up and then we're going to switch and one receiver's running a post and the other's running a corner. Like, you're running a leak route with a tight end where he's got to, you know, one, he's not the fastest dude on the planet. Two, he's got to kind of get up through the defense and then up the other way. Like, that stuff takes a lot of time. And it takes time to wait to see it. Not only does it take time to run, it takes time to see. You need 3 seconds in the pocket. It's press coverage. I got my matchup. Safety can't get over there. It may not be a 70-yard go ball, but we can hit a 30-yard fade real easy. And that kind of stuff is really important. Then you have, obviously, the solution, if you hit a couple of those, is, okay, well, now we got two safeties and we got someone over there to help over the top. Okay, now we've taken the defender out of the box. And that's where Cliff's willingness to run the football and Brian Robinson and Austin Eckler's skill is a counterpunch. And so it is like the game is not that simple, but it starts with that of understanding where the numbers advantage is. And I think Cliff traditionally has been actually pretty good at this. And it's enhanced, by the way, with a quarterback run game because that makes it even harder to be right.
How worrisome do you think it is, you know, because I love the fact that it is simple for Jaden, but as we've seen with Cliff Kingsbury's offenses, you know, they usually start off good. They function very well to start, but then down the stretch of the season, you know, it sort of kind of gets figured out. So how worried would you say you are with, you know, a simplified version of the offense or Jaden, you know, working early on, say we are winning, say we are losing, like, but the offense is functional. How worrisome would it be on the back end, though?
I'm worried.
Okay.
It's been a thing. Do I have faith that he can do it? Yes.
Yeah.
I'm like a 5 out of 10.
Okay.
Like, I truly think it's a 50-50 proposition of whether Cliff finally is like, I know this is a thing. I don't have to worry about being a head coach. This is an NFL. You know, I'm in the NFL. This isn't college. I got to figure it out. And he does. I'm also like, what is the underlying cause of why he couldn't figure that out in the past? He's really smart. He's not a dummy as a human, and he's not a football dummy. So what is the underlying thing that can he not do it during a season, and has that thing been addressed? And I don't know. I think there is a level to that of like, what do you keep in your bag / what counters? And also like, what are the defenses? You know, I've just described like this really hard conundrum that is pretty basic of, do you have the numbers to stop the run or the numbers to the people in place to limit some of the vertical passing against what is a very fast Commanders receiving core and a quarterback who throws the ball deep very well? Like, there's only so many answers to that. And part of that is going to be the horses of the teams that you play against. Like, do they find ways to disguise coverage that work? Do they have the players to make those disguises work? Because, yeah, if you got, you know, the ultimate example of Troy Polamalu that's showing double A-gap blitz and then is a single high safety 30 yards off the ball, and he can somehow be both, showing blitz and then be a middle field safety. You thought you had cover zero, and then Troy Polamalu picks you off 40 yards down the field. Like, that's not a scheme issue. That's a player issue. And so that's not what happened to Cliff, obviously. Troy had retired by the time that Cliff was in Arizona. But, like, just an example of the some of this is player-related, some of this is scheme-related. It's happened consistently enough that there's something that's scheme-related, and I'm hoping that by November, I don't have or by December, I don't have clarity as to why Cliff can't make those adjustments, but I fully understand that it could be a part of the process. Real quickly, just to not leave this, the shoe undone, if you will. We're walking around with our shoelace untied. The game plan run stuff is something that Cliff has been pretty good at. The most simplistic description of a game plan run is, like, we know you like this blitz, or we know you will line up in a certain alignment based off of our personnel. And so we know that if we can get you where we want you, we can stick an extra blocker somewhere where you're not expecting. And that might open up a second level, you know, where a guy at the second level is normally free to make a tackle. We're going to ignore someone somewhere else because we know we can get away with it based off our scouting. We're going to put that blocker on the second level, and now we're into the secondary. And you see some big, big plays where this happened a lot to the Commanders, actually. They got game plan run on a ton last year. They were down in, down out against most teams with base runs pretty consistent. And then you'd have teams just figure out, we can get 4 to 5 a game that are 20-plus yards because they're going to react a certain way to this thing. And you only get it once because then you make an adjustment. But there was enough of those things in the defense the last couple of years that the Commanders have gotten killed by it. And Cliff's been pretty good at getting teams on that stuff. So definitely something to watch for, some of the big explosive plays. And we'll have the chance to break them down on Take Command, and we'll bring some of the analysis here to the radio as well. We'll get to the defense and how they scheme it up coming up at 6:30. We will let you know how much easier it is to watch film, if that's your thing, coming up at 6 o'clock. Really, really cool. Even if you're not that into the film, but you kind of want to understand how a lot of the NFL teams are looking at the information available to them. Great chat with Bill Smith of the NFL Network and the NFL's Director of Research and Analytics coming up at 6 o'clock. But next, when we last left our heroes Friday, I had a huge problem in my home. And I'm going to tell you how it got resolved over the weekend and make a public service announcement based off of that. No, I'm like an actual real thing that can help you next on your radio, the way radio is supposed to be, damn it. Coming up at 6 p.m., Bill Smith, the NFL's Director of Research and Analytics, joins us here on the Hoffman Show. Right now, though, Anthony, an update on a very important story from Friday on the show. If folks remember, I think it was about this time, actually, that we let the folks in on some struggles that I was having. And, of course, with the long weekend we weren't on yesterday. Plus, there was an update, a very important update this morning that will ultimately result in a PSA, a true old-fashioned public service announcement. So Washington Gas holds the monopoly for gas service in this area, and specifically in the District of Columbia, where I am a district resident. And we woke up on Wednesday morning to an email and a voicemail and all of the mails that our gas had been shut off because, well, there was a smell of a leak. And they came at 11 p.m. the night before, unbeknownst to us, because we live in a condo unit. And they got into the garage area, which is a common area, and shut it off. And that's good. Good job, Washington Gas, because gas leaks are bad, Anthony. Definitively, gas leaks are bad. So then we went through a whole kerfuffle of calling them and being like, hey, you guys shut off our gas. Like, what do we do now? And they're like, you have to call a technician. And I'm like, well, we can't. That's kind of stupid because we were renters in a condo building. And so we contacted our landlord and contacted our building management, and they were actually super duper helpful. Everyone on our end did a great job. They called a tech. Tech came out there, fixed it. And then we had to call Washington Gas again and tell them to come turn our gas back on, because even though we could have the building fix our gas, because for account security reasons, we had to be the ones to then be like, hey, it's fixed. They couldn't, you know, trust the building management because we have our own individual accounts. Blah, 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 blah. And so we call them and we have been told, like, hey, call back as soon as it's fixed and we'll do a same day appointment. Didn't get fixed till late at night on Wednesday. So we call first thing on Thursday and they're like, sorry, we don't have any availability today. And so we're like, we just don't have gas today? And they're like, no. I was like, that's not what you said yesterday. And they're like, sorry. I'm like, fine. Please come early as you can tomorrow. So Friday comes around and got no gas and it's getting closer to like 1-2 o'clock in the afternoon. And we call and we're like, hey, what the hell? They're like, sorry, we can't give you an ETA. We said 7 a.m. to 5 p.m. And oh, by the way, it might be after 5 p.m. It might not be until at least not like the latest is 9 p.m. And we're like, oh, hell no. You told us same day. You're now going on 2 days. This is nonsense. And so around 5 o'clock, my lovely sweet wife, who is typically very mild-mannered and very, very kind and all of those things, she called Washington Gas and she lost it because they were like, we can't tell you anything. And she's like, you better be able to tell us anything because we're now at the point where we have no hot water. This is a safety and sanitation issue. And here's the thing about my wife, Anthony. She's really smart and she's really good at researching stuff. And while she is not a lawyer, she works at a law firm. And so she went and looked up all of the litigation against Washington Gas for, you guessed it, poor customer service in response to gas leaks and turning customers' gas back on, and found out that they had been sued multiple times for multi-million dollars. And she is now bringing this up to the people on the phone of like, this seems to be a problem for you. If you'd like it to not be a problem again moving forward, you might want to come turn our gas back on.
And they turned it on, I'm assuming.
Nope. Nope.
What?
Nope. Nope. Not only did they not turn it on, some Yahoo at Washington Gas, in an effort because we, at that point, the show ended and I get on this phone call too, and I'm like, what in the absolute hell are you guys doing? Here's what you're going to do. You're going to send someone to our house to turn our gas back on. And so they, apparently angry that we were upset that they weren't providing the thing that they're supposed to, some Yahoo supervisor who had already given, like, one person gave Rachel one story, someone else said something else. We found out, by the way, that apparently, according to one of the people that we talked to, a tech had come to our place to turn it back on, couldn't find parking, and left without calling. And so, yeah, not couldn't find parking. We didn't respond. We didn't answer. They didn't call either of us and they just left. And they didn't call us to be like, hey, there's a problem. We need better directions. No, like we were just, that's why we had to call again to be like, hey, what happened? And so eventually some Yahoo we find out later in a way that I'll explain in a second. And I still promise this is getting to me not complaining, but an action item for anybody who's listening that has a similar problem. Someone changed the request type. Because remember, long weekend to Monday, which in order to do that, for Tuesday, we weren't going to get our gas back until today because we didn't pay our bill, which is not true because we're on auto pay, which we found out when we called their emergency line. Because while their customer service line was closed, we called their emergency line and was like, hello, we have an emergency. You haven't turned our gas back on and we no longer have hot water. And this is a problem. And it was caused by, because it's the gas leak line, caused by a gas leak. I was not going to fake a gas leak. That is very bad. Don't do that. I was honest with the dispatcher, a lovely lady named Pam, who was incredibly helpful and told us that the other person had put that false claim in our account. Which led to my wife, the very law-savvy, very thorough human that she is, filing a complaint with the city, which is exactly where the PSA comes in. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls in the greater Washington area, if you are listening, Rachel heard back this morning real quick from the city. And if you ever have a problem with your utilities, did you know you can just call the city and they'll take care of it for you because they don't play. And so we are looking forward to hearing more from the city's investigative unit on our behalf. And I'm sure Washington Gas is not. Shout out to Pam, who helped us out and was actually helpful. And to Paul, the service tech, who came and turned on our gas fairly early on Saturday morning Because by the time we got off the phone with Pam, she could make no promises. But she's like, you call in the morning and you say this and you should get service really quick. And we sure did. And the PSA is the city has an accountability for utilities, the power commission. And if you need help with any of your power issues, apparently you can give them a call and they'll be a lot better than the folks that we dealt with. That's the story. That's the update, Anthony. And we enjoyed hot water all weekend long.
Man, you guys went through some hoops to get that gas on. Oh, my gosh.
Can you believe that they freaking lied to us and then tried to falsely change our... Like, how stupid... Like, all the calls are recorded. All the files are, like... What? And the laws are really strict because these are public utilities.
Yeah.
Idiots. Well, and by the way, that's the emergency line. We're pretty sure that all the best folks work there because of all the lawsuits that probably happened on that part of the company.
Yeah.
And look, I respect that everyone's got a job to do and that a lot of people are out there trying to do their best. But to whoever was working that customer service line, maybe you just wanted to get home. We just wanted power in our house, which I did say to them. I was like, if this was your family, would this be a satisfactory answer? And there was a long silence on the other end of the phone. So, yeah.
Good gracious.
Times. All right. Anyway, we get back to football. Bill Smith, the NFL's Director of Research and Analytics, joins us here on The Hoffman Show.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be. To be.
It's not just about watching the game, it's about betting on it. I'm Mike Valeni, and on Cash the Ticket, Jim Costa and I break down every college football and NFL matchup like it's the last game we're ever going to watch, from the best bets to the sneaky underdogs, and of course, as my co-host likes to say, the value. And the one thing we're not going to do is pretend we're professionals. We have fun with it, it's an entertainment product, and it makes watching games a hell of a lot of fun. So Cash the Ticket, follow it in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
In life and recovery, every day is a little different. Embrace the good days, the not so good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.